Welcome to Cannabis House Call. This podcast is committed to educating the discerning public and will make the case for cannabis as medicine. Your hosts, Dr. Les Matthews and Dr. Hal Altman, are physicians with advanced degrees in medical cannabis. The Cannabis House Call is sponsored by Compassionate Certification Centers, or CCC. CCC is a physician-owned and leading medical marijuana certification center that helps patients receive legal access to medical marijuana in Pennsylvania. Having certified more than 100,000 patients across the state through its in-office and virtual telehealth appointments, CCC makes the process of getting a Pennsylvania medical marijuana card fast and easy. Learn more at cccregister.com.
Hello and welcome back to Cannabis House Call. My name is Les Matthews, and I'm joined in this production by Dr. Hal Altman. We are both physicians with advanced degrees in medical cannabis, and welcome you to Cannabis House Call, where our goal is to provide unbiased education for all things cannabis. In this, our second episode of our series of podcasts, we want to begin by taking a dive into the historical aspects of cannabis. And as you'll quickly learn, the history of cannabis is deep and very rich and goes back thousands of years. So with that said, I'm going to introduce Hal to begin that conversation. Welcome again, Hal.
Thanks, Les. Kind of risky to get into a history lesson on our first substantive podcast, but I think hopefully the listeners will find this to be as interesting as we have. We find ourselves in the 20th century in the middle of a debate, controversy, whatever you want to call it, concerning the application of cannabis as medicine. And our hope over this podcast and probably the next one is to lay the groundwork so that you understand how we got to the state that we're in and we're faced with this debate. So, quite frankly, medical cannabis has been around for almost 5,000 years, at least the recorded history that we can find. The botanists tell us that it evolved into the cannabis that we recognize today, cannabis sativa, as one of the strains, about 28 million years ago. And beginning with the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Persians, most of the really sophisticated leaders in the ancient world, there were medical applications that were found in some of the writings that were left. Cannabis was used in a variety of ways to treat earaches, to treat GI disturbance, to treat depression, seizures, pain, sleep, anesthesia, many of the same things that we're trying to use it for today. Obviously, the scientific method was not known then, wasn't applied. Most of the knowledge that came down through the ages was anecdotal. That changed in the 19th century. There was a man whose name is Dr. William O'Shaughnessy, an Irishman who spent some time in India. And India has a strain of cannabis called indica. And he brought some of the cannabis indica back to Ireland and to the UK and started to use it to treat patients. Very quickly, his colleagues recognized its application and started to use it. And by 1854, it was actually included in the dispensatory of the United States, which is the precursor of the pharmacopoeia, the compendium of medications that are available for doctors to use. In 1860, the Ohio States Medical Society actually organized the first conference in this country to consider cannabis's application as medicine, which led us to the late 19th and early 20th century, where many of the pharmaceutical companies started to produce cannabis-containing products. Most of it was tincture or oral. And big-name companies like Merck, Bristol-Myers, and Park Davis, and Eli Lilly actually had products that you could buy at your local pharmacy. And then, suddenly, in the 20th century, the pendulum swung, and cannabis fell out of favor as a medication. And really the big question, and I think what Les and I want to help you understand, is why would that happen? Was there something that happened scientifically? Was there something that happened societally or politically that impacted that? And that's the next subject that we're going to address.
Thanks, Hal. This change that you allude to that took place early in the 20th century was not based on any science or not based on any solid research that in any way impeached cannabis as a medication. It was indeed driven more by political and societal issues that were evolving at that time and for which cannabis became a victim, if you will. So let's talk a little bit about those changes, Hal, and what happened to make that pendulum swing the other way.
There actually are two areas of change. The first that we'll address is the medical world itself. Up until the 20th century, the scientific method, that is, you know, testing products to see if they were worthwhile as medicine, was pretty much unknown. And in the Western world, there was a penchant for individual compounds that could be studied. I think most everybody understands that our early medications came and come from nature. And when the big farms got involved, their interest was in trying to develop synthetic compounds that then could be tested individually to see whether or not they had effect. So the modern clinical trials came into being, and a group of patients with a certain malady would be given a dose of a known quantity and composition of a medicine. And another group of patients would be getting a placebo or something that really didn't have any action. And then the outcome of both those cohorts of patients would be examined, and we would come to some scientific conclusion. The problem with cannabis fitting into that rubric is that cannabis is a compound that has over 500 potentially active ingredients. And so the permutations of how much THC, CBD, the other components of the plant are overwhelming and very, very difficult to be able to study in a traditional clinical trial. So cannabis got caught up in the wave in this country of moving towards single compounds that were synthetic. Botanical medicine was sort of frowned upon, quite honestly. So that is certainly one of the things that led to its decrease in use. The more important thing, I think, is the societal and the political milieu that we found ourselves in the 20th century. And there, I'm not going to overwhelm anybody with names, but there were three major players in the 20th century that sort of created the atmosphere that we inherited today. Those players are a man whose name was Harry Anslinger, who became the first chief of the Narcotics Bureau of the United States in the 30s and 40s after serving on the prohibition panel that was a miserable failure in the 20s. Second player is William Randolph Hearst. I think everybody remembers that he was a newspaper magnate. He owned paper mills, was interested in lining his pockets, and was also a racist, a xenophobe, somebody who did not like minorities and had an axe to grind. And then finally, Richard Nixon in the late 20th century contributed to this, and we'll get into what led his dislike of cannabis as well. So back to Anslinger. Anslinger was, as I mentioned, the first chief of Narcotics Bureau. He had a real dislike for Mexicans and blacks. And we started to see an influx of Mexican immigration in the early 20th century. And with that influx came mostly poor working immigrants. And their recreational drug of choice was cannabis, but in their language, marijuana. They used marijuana as opposed to alcohol because it was less expensive, easier to use. At the same time, there was a movement in the black population and a lot of particularly jazz musicians, started to use cannabis. It sort of became attached to, connected to that population. And again, Anslinger was not fond of either Mexicans or the blacks. So he saw marijuana, as he termed it, as a way to be able to persecute those populations and to take them off the streets. The second player is William Randolph Hearst. Hearst, as I mentioned, was the head of a very large newspaper company. He shared the same dislike of those racial groups that Anslinger had. He reached out to Anslinger, and together they came up with a propaganda plan that would try to convince the American public that marijuana was an evil drug and led to decadence and to violence. Hearst had many of his papers publish negative, misleading misinformation about cannabis. He teamed with Anslinger in 1936 to produce a movie that was called Reefer Madness. And I would encourage people to take a look at Reefer Madness. It's kind of become a cult classic and really depicts people who use marijuana, cannabis, as depraved murderers and tried to convince the American public that it was only used by criminals. Just to give the listeners sort of a flavor of Anslinger's character, I want to read a quote from a book that I would recommend to interested listeners that's called Marijuana, a Short Story by John Hudak, published in 2020. And this is a quote: "No one who places a marijuana cigarette to his lips knows whether he will become a philosopher, a joyous reveler in musical heaven, a calm philosopher, or a murderer." And again, if you watch Reefer Madness, he answers his rhetorical question and presents people who smoked reefer, as they called it, and became murderers, rapists, and committed all sorts of crimes. So we go from cannabis being an effective medication for 5,000 years to suddenly falling out of political and societal favor. And in order to try to curtail its use, Anslinger encouraged the legislature to pass a law called the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. And this was a law that didn't create criminality for the use of cannabis, but it levied taxes to a degree that the average person could not afford to buy or use cannabis. So as opposed to outlawing it, they used taxes to try to restrict its use. Interestingly enough, the AMA responded to that threat of a Marijuana Tax Act by issuing a statement in 1943. And that statement is, quote, "There's nothing in the medical use of cannabis that has any relation to cannabis addiction. I use the word cannabis in preference to the word marijuana because cannabis is the correct term for describing the plant and its products. The term marijuana is a mongrel word that has crept into this country over the Mexican border and has no general meaning except as it relates to the use of cannabis preparations for smoking. It is not recognized in medicine." Interestingly enough, the AMA, the spokesperson for the medical world in the States, came out really oppositional to the Tax Act and its impact on having cannabis be available as a medicine.
Hal, thank you for that dive into the history of cannabis. Sometimes it can be a little dry, but I think it's important, as you said, for the listening audience to understand the roller coaster, if you will, that cannabis has been on from a legal and regulatory standpoint. And when we come back in our third episode, we're going to get into the more modern aspects of cannabis legalization, criminalization, and so on, starting with Richard Nixon. So thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. And I want to conclude with a question. We had asked our listeners to submit questions for us to address. We received one, and I will paraphrase this, but the listener asks, I hear so much nowadays about opioid use, abuse, fentanyl, and overdose-related deaths associated with the use of these drugs. How come I don't hear about that with cannabis? It's a great question, and I think it's fair to say that unless you drive a motor vehicle impaired by cannabis or fly an airplane impaired by cannabis, that the chances of you dying from using cannabis are almost zero. And the simple reason is that cannabis is not a respiratory depressant. So when you overdose on opioids, you basically stop breathing, and that's how you die. And you've heard of Narcan, which is the antidote. And if someone is given that drug soon enough after they overdose, it can reverse the effects, allow them to resume breathing and save their lives. But fortunately, the same side effect is not associated with cannabis. So cannabis does not cause respiratory depression and therefore is not a culprit in causing unexpected overdose and death. So I hope that answers your question, and we'll join you next time. We look forward to seeing you, and thanks for listening. All information, material, and content on this podcast is for general information and educational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for professional and/or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment by a qualified physician or healthcare provider. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and any materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. Cannabis House Call does not offer personal health or medical advice. If you have a medical emergency, call your doctor or call 911 immediately.